Thank you, Madam Provost. I'd now like to turn to the last matter of my report and to provide governors with an overview of my response to the report of the Advisory Committee on Divestment from Fossil Fuels. The response was released last week. I hope governors have had a chance to read it. It is 43 pages long, for which I apologize. In case you haven't had a chance to read it, I'd like to provide, I guess, an overview of some of the most salient points. Really, the starting premise for this work is that the threat of climate change is indeed real. It is very much the defining issue of our time. Moreover, Canada has committed to meeting the Paris Agreement targets, do everything in its power to help limit the increase in global temperatures to no more than 1.5 degrees centigrade. And the university has a responsibility to pursue effective action going beyond symbolic statements, gestures, and moral victories. So after reading and digesting the report of the Advisory Committee very, very thoughtfully, and also spending quite a bit of time reading through the international literature on this subject, and it's quite voluminous as one can imagine, the conclusion I reached was that ultimately divestment is not an effective approach for us to take here. It does little to induce fossil fuel producers to change their practices. One has to attack the problem of greenhouse gas emissions from both the supply side, that is from fossil fuel producers, as well as the demand side through fossil fuel consumers. Ultimately, the latter is far more significant in Canada, where 75% of Canada's greenhouse gas emissions are generated by those parts of the economy that consume fossil fuels, not those that produce them. This does not mean that we ignore the supply side, far from it, but to be truly effective, we need a framework that addresses both sides. The response that I have offered on behalf of the university is comprehensive, and it addresses four primary dimensions. As I say, it is 43 pages long, and it was designed really to make clear that we are taking this challenge very, very seriously, as well as our responsibility to act. So let me just go through the parts. I'm going to spend most of the time talking about part one, which was looking at the university as investor. So let me begin by stating clearly that UTAM does not have direct investments in any of the seven firms identified by the advisory committee as blatantly disregarding the Paris Agreement target. Looking to the future, I'm advocating an approach which I describe as an active ESG factor-based investment strategy, where ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance factors. It's an approach that accepts some very important elements of the recommendations from the advisory committee. First of all, like the committee's recommendations, it endorses a targeted firm-specific approach versus a blanket approach. Secondly, it too advocates a dynamic approach where the assessments that we make of individual firms may change over time as their behavior changes. And third, it endorses the idea which was recommended by the committee that ESG factors ought to be considered when assessing potential investments, as they may affect the long-term risk and return associated with those investments. Moreover, the approach that I'm advocating follows the approach adopted by many of our leading pension funds, including Canada Pension Plan Investment Board, Ontario Teachers, OMERS, BC Investment Management Corporation, and others. It's also in line with the emerging consensus in the international literature on responsible investment, again, based on an ESG factor-based investment strategy, where one takes advantage of this approach to send important signals to the market about those kinds of practices one favors, as well as those kinds of practices that one does not favor, and allocating one's capital accordingly. But one does this alongside of shareholder activism and engagement, both alone as a single investor, and by joining coalitions whose power collectively may indeed far exceed what we can exert on our own. Finally, it is very much in line with the initiative announced in Paris by Mark Carney, the current governor of the Bank of England, former governor of the Bank of Canada, as well as Michael Bloomberg, through the work of the Financial Stability Board, to assess climate-related risk in a consistent way and to use these tools to enable investors to assess prospective investments in a consistent way. Accordingly, following on from this approach, I am directing you, Tam, first of all, to articulate principles that will enable consideration of ESG factors in undertaking its direct investments, and ideally to have this articulated by no later than the 1st of July of this year. I'm asking them to initiate the process by which we become a signatory to the Carbon Disclosure Project, but we're not stopping there. We are also asking UTEP to evaluate our signing onto the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investment, asking UTEP also to determine ways in which it can vote proactively and deliberately on shareholder resolutions aimed at reducing climate-related risk for firms in which they are directly invested. So there's an activist component here. Also asking UTEP to evaluate signing the Montreal Carbon Pledge, which commits investors to measuring and publicly disclosing the carbon footprint of their investment portfolios every year. And finally, asking UTEP to report annually on its efforts to assess ESG factors in making investment decisions and its impact on UTEP's operations and its portfolio. The benefits of this approach are, first of all, that it allows the university to uphold its important fiduciary responsibility to the beneficiaries of both the endowment and the pension plan, providing a way for us to do so while taking into consideration how climate change and other ESG factors may affect the long-term performance of our investments. Indeed, I would say that it's becoming clear that our fiduciary responsibility now requires us to take these factors into consideration as we manage our long-term assets. I should also add that this is entirely consistent with the legal opinion that was sought by the university on behalf of the advisory committee. And this opinion was not based on moral arguments, but on, and I quote here, the long-term best financial interests of the beneficiaries. This is extremely important, the long-term best financial interests of the beneficiaries. Secondly, I've argued that this is an effective approach in that it seeks to change behavior of both fossil fuel producers and fossil fuel consumers. It's only by changing the concrete practices of firms and consumers that we have any hope of really meeting the challenge of climate change successfully. And I would say that there's very, very strong consensus on that point across this literature. Once fully implemented, I argue in the report that I believe this approach will likely produce results that are consistent with the committee's own recommendations, though we will be getting there in a different way. Third, I would argue that this framework can be applied to assess not just climate-related factors, but also other environmental considerations, such as how the practices of individual firms affect air pollution, water pollution, and soil pollution. It can allow us to take into account the S factors, that is the social factors and considerations, such as a firm's labor practices, or indeed the impact of their practices on indigenous communities. And under the G, it allows us to address firms' behavior with regard to governance mechanisms related to transparency, related to the ability of shareholders to participate in corporate decision-making, and to affect change in corporate behavior. These are all quite significant. Fourth, I would argue that this offers a practical approach that allows UTEM to avail itself of services that are now offered by third-party providers to assess ESG practices of firms, including their carbon footprint and their greenhouse gas emissions, as well as the cumulative carbon footprint of our own overall portfolio. So there is some wisdom here in not requiring us to reinvent the wheel, but to make use of best practices which are rapidly emerging in this area. And finally, I would argue that this approach is comprehensive, and I say in the response that we should give serious consideration to extending a similar ESG factor-based approach to our indirect investments, that is to say, those that we make through pooled and index funds, over time as our ability to assess these considerations improves. Ultimately, this would amount to us using all $6.5 billion of our long-term assets under management to effect positive change with respect to climate change and other ESG challenges. The remaining sections of the report speak to the university as a research performer and innovation catalyst, the university as an educator, the university as an energy consumer, as well as talking about some mechanisms to coordinate our actions across these different dimensions. The point here is that in the world of investments, we're relatively small potatoes. $6.5 billion sounds like a lot of money. We're small compared to, say, CPPIB or teachers. But in the world of teaching and research, we are a very big player. And this is one area where we can make huge contributions, as well as through our daily operations as a place with an operating budget exceeding $2 billion a year and a research budget which exceeds $1 billion per year, broadly defined. So we will commit to the following initiatives in these areas. First of all, a tri-campus clean tech challenge to encourage environment and energy-related entrepreneurship. Secondly, we're committing $750,000 to be distributed over 3 years for climate change-related academic initiatives. Third, we're talking about prioritizing climate change-related themes in selected programs and curricula across our three campuses. Next, we are committing to increasing the utilities production revolving fund by 50%, going from $5 million to $7.5 million, to encourage more extensive implementation of energy-saving retrofits in our buildings. We're also talking about formally adopting substantially more rigorous energy efficiency standards for capital projects. We will pursue opportunities to use our campuses as test beds for environmental and sustainability research and the showcasing of best practices. We will investigate the potential for development of other renewable energy projects on university-owned lands. And finally, we will establish a new University of Toronto Committee on the Environment, Climate Change, and Sustainability, led by our presidential advisor, and with a mandate to coordinate and advance U of T's environmental research, innovation, education, and energy consumption initiatives. Let me end, Madam Chair, by thanking the members of the advisory committee for their excellent work on this important topic. I also want to extend thanks to the members of U of T350.org for engaging in this important discussion in such a constructive and civil way. We may differ on questions of strategy and approach, but I think we all share a common interest in tackling what is truly the defining issue of our time. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. Members of the Governing Council, any questions or comments for the President? I guess we'll start with Susan and then Stephen.
First of all, thank you to President for his thoughtful and well-shared response to the report on what fossil fuel climate. However, I did ask that there be some more concrete timelines given in some of the actions proposed. So specifically, we've spoken
Thank you, Susan. On timelines, so you're right, we have committed to July 1 for the principals. On that score, let me just mention that UTAM engages as a member of the Responsible Investing Committee chaired by our Chief Financial Officer. That committee also includes student, both graduate and undergraduate students, as well as staff. And they have been quite active in making recommendations through the Chief Financial Officer's office to UTAM and engaging in very constructive discussion. They've already been engaged in discussing the Carbon Disclosure Project as a one form of action, as well as the UNPRI and these other initiatives that I described, and that will continue. I'm happy to report that, in fact, following release of my response, UTAM staff have already initiated the application to the Carbon Disclosure Project to become a member, a signatory. So UTAM would be the signatory, the University of Toronto would become a member. So that is the first step, and that is already in play, in process. And I will be happy to report back on similar milestones as we see progress on that front. Similarly, on the issue of the composition of the committee, we will be thinking carefully about that, but it would be highly unlikely that we would exclude students from it.
Stephen.
Thank you again,
Mr.
Chair.
Thank you. Great idea. Thank you.
Okay, secondly, a question on governance. Great to see that UTAM is advancing in such a quick fashion of the White House, but could you just clarify for us all what the governance approval process will be for that? Will those specific principles be brought forward for discussion, debate, and approval at this council?
No. They don't come to this council. They go to the UTAM board for its consideration. So, board includes members of the administration as well as the faculty association. There's one senior rector president from UTAM himself is on the board. So those are where those principles would be discussed and approved. With regard to the way that those principles impact on our pension-related investments, though, the pension committee will be asked to consider how these principles then should be reflected in the statement of investment principles and practices, which have to be approved by the pension committee.
Thank you, JP. And then Keith.
Thank you very much. So, first off, I just want to say that I absolutely agree with all of the actions that you recommend we take. I need to report. I think that everything that you're saying the university should do, the university absolutely should do. However, I do personally believe that divestment should be layered on top of that over and above it. I don't think that the size of the portfolio the university is managing is really relevant to the conversation, because really the opportunity that the university has is to impact a broader discussion and really contribute to this grassroots conversation that's going on at the national level, and that is ultimately going to change the consumer behavior and the individual behavior that is absolutely necessary to address these problems. I mean, being in line with what everyone else in the world is doing, with what the pension funds are doing, is kind of another way of saying business as usual. And the problem is that we got to this point vis-a-vis climate change by all doing the same thing. And in order for us to actually change the status quo, we need people to be the first to take a big step and go out there alone. And really, that is the opportunity that the university might do, to really be a leader here and to send a message to the world that the status quo isn't enough, and that the calamity that is climate change requires actions that go above and beyond what everyone else is doing. So I guess really the question is, what is wrong with symbolic gestures?
So I actually don't agree with the premise of your proposition that this is a business as usual approach. I think you are seeing a fundamental transformation across the investment industry when you have people like Mark Carney saying, look, we can't approach it, the investment business in the way that we used to, that we have to fundamentally reorient the way that we make such decisions. That is a significant moment, I think, in the evolution of this industry and in terms of the history of the planet. And I think what we're proposing here is very much in step with the kinds of changes that the most progressive organizations in financial services around the world are embracing. With respect to symbols, really, you know, my interest here is very much driven by the clarion call from many, including our own Minister of Environment and Climate Change, as we say in the opening pages of this document, that this is a time for substantive action, right, where we really have to put commitments in place that will move the needle in a significant way. My call was that this is best done in ways that alter the way that we make investments, but also in terms of the other activities that the university can do so well.
Thank you, Keith.
So, just a comment. I've heard the administrator's perspective. I've read the materials from these groups. I'm looking forward to being a student speaker later on. And I'd like to protest that aside. By the way, it's supposed to be really tasty. So what I just want to say is when I hear both sides, but it seems to be that the same end goals are there, the same belief system really is there overall. And hearing the protest that side, I'm not sure that both sides actually are communicating effectively back and forth. I think the content is there, but what the protest that I side, I think in a number of ways actually are things you actually do believe in. So I just wanted to throw this out, but I think the communication issue back and forth in both sides, you both want the same end goal. You both have the same things you want to go through to do, but you're not talking effectively to each other.
Don't forget the ad hoc committee in the middle, who also recommended that.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Keith, for your comments. Did you want to, I'm sorry, we have speaking protocols, I apologize. Did you want
to? Sure. Well, Keith, let me just say that, up until the point where the response was issued publicly, there was actually quite a lot of communication, and you probably know that I did meet with members of UT350.org and welcomed their input in terms of their written submissions, read their brief and their petition very closely, as well as their community response document. And you're right, we do want the same things. The question really comes down to what is the most effective way of achieving those things. You've heard the rationale that I've provided. Now, I do hope that with the formation of this new Committee on Environment, Climate Change and Sustainability, we'll create a table for this kind of conversation to continue.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I can't allow the outburst from this individual. Yeah, thank you very much. If I could ask you to please hold your comments. Thank you very much. PC, you had some comments to make?
Thank you. I must say the administration's response is a balanced and a holistic approach. And I must confess that I was initially conflicted. Indeed, I must say that I would be hard-pressed to support the administration's response if we are not doing anything, but we are doing something. And as President Douglas said, it will be a difference in strategy. And overall, I'm not going to repeat all those reasons that President Douglas has so adequately addressed. But overall, and I came to this conclusion for me very, very recently in the past couple of days. I must say I am supporting the administration's balanced and holistic approach. And on behalf of the 20,000, over 20,000 steel workers who are employed in the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry, I thank you.
Thank you, BC. Young, and then Gabriel.
Still a little bit new to this, so I hope I get it out right. And it's a little bit to what JP was saying, but it's not about the symbolism of leaving. This, more than any other issue, I'm getting questions about from lots of people who now know I'm on governing council, and I struggle. though. I understand parts of the report very well, as the reports as an investor, I think, are outlined and researched very, very well. That's close to what I do. Other parts are harder to understand. But when something presses me and says, where are we ahead of other universities, other funds, other actors in this field, it is very hard for me to come up with a question with a good answer for that. I believe, I hope we are. But I was wondering if there's a way for the leadership of the university to supply this committee with the response to that question that we can articulate based on evidence, based on peer groups, based on others, where indeed we're leading. And if we're not, then it comes down to, okay, the symbolism is bad. If we are, I think that does underline that it's more than symbolism. I think it is all of us feeling like we'd like to be ahead of others.
I understand the sentiment entirely. Well, let me outline a few ways in which I think we are leading here. First of all, the comprehensiveness of this response, the multiple dimensions. And I would make a comparison between our response and, say, that of MIT, where MIT basically said no to divestment, end of discussion about investment practices, and then went on and outlined, you know, many millions of dollars they're going to allocate to research and teaching related to energy and climate change related issues, and outlined the industrial partnerships that they were going to engage in, but really failed to address the key question of whether or not it would change the way that they make investments. Failed to address, you know, how they would use this new evidence and these new tools to rethink their approach to investment. So what I think is most significant here when we make the comparison is that I'm not just saying no to divestment and full stop, but actually proposing a more active, positive approach that describes how we will allocate our investments, starting with our direct investments, but ultimately I believe we should move to our indirect investments as well. So that is significant. Another comparison I would make is between us and those other institutions that have said, well, we're not going to change our investment practices so much, but we're going to, you know, create a new green fund of $5 million or $10 million in order to invest in sustainable business, that kind of thing, encourage the development of renewables and so on. That's great, but in terms of relative impact, it's a drop in the bucket, even compared to, you know, our $6.5 billion of that long-term assets under management that we could ultimately convert entirely into a fund that is oriented to making serious progress with regard to climate change. So those would be a few responses.
Abram, you had some comments?
I just wanted to say that, that the first thank the president for his response in this particular report. I was truly very pleased with the response. Again, as people said, it was well balanced. But I was also very proud in the sense that what the report seemed to me to be doing was really taking our strengths, which is really our academic strengths, and putting it towards a particular problem in very many ways, both from an educational point of view, from a research point of view, from looking at making sure our investments are appropriate, etc. So it's easy to just say divest. I mean, that's a slogan. You don't like something, you basically divest, and that's the end of the story, and then you can go on. And that seems to be the push here. And I'm pleased that actually the university, the president, didn't fall into this, I wouldn't say trap, but into this slogan, in a sense, but came up with a plan that's really a plan of action. And I agree we should look at the outcomes in a couple of years' time and see how we've done. But I think if many of the things are done as put forward in the plan, I think we'll be well ahead. And I have no worries of being a leader in this area. I think anybody who really reads this plan carefully can assume that this is a true leadership and not just a bunch of slogans being put together. So thank you.
Thank you.
Ms.
Nancy?
Just
a
question on the mechanism to this body, and I would propose, given the significance of the issue, that we not wait a couple of years, asking that you come back on an annual basis against these four initiatives and any others that might that your staff and administration may come up with.
So there is a commitment to UTEM making annual reports on this, and we happy to share those with this body and more broadly around the entire university. Those will be public reports, but I'm happy to help propel those reports more effectively.
If I could just ask a supplemental, the tone that you give, that this is comprehensive, can you report back on the whole comprehensive, the money that's been spent, the research that you
have? Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why I'm suggesting the formation of this new committee that will be the place where these things are discussed, where we continue to ensure that the university is at the cutting edge of its activities in this regard. It's also important, really, to have a table across which excellent practices are shared between different parts of the university. And discussing this with a number of deans, for example, around the university, I was struck by how little they knew about what one another was already doing in regard to advancing sustainability and the fight against climate change. So, as is often the case with other aspects of life at U of T, having an opportunity to exchange and share those kinds of practices, I think, will be very helpful.
Thank you. Jane, did you have some comments?
I just had one further question, if I may. I know that the interest, the open letter from the select former members of the ad hoc committee, I take it as only some, I'm not exactly sure. The committee acknowledged that, in fact, the application of ESG-related factors quote, amount to de facto investment in line with what they recommended and went on to make a couple of other comments. And I understand ESG, environmental, social, and the governance applicability, but if the concept of social injury is one to be avoided in our investments, what I'd like to understand is that for those investments that may have S and G factors, but no impact on the environment, in property and rights practices, for example, labor practices, state from the lands of indigenous people, going ahead, will the ESG factors be applied on investment decisions even when there is no E?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time I would invite Mr. Graham Henry.